This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food. Of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. And today we're talking about Handel's Messiah. It's always associated with Christmas, but this time it's coming our way with a bit of a seasonal tweak. Paul Baker, conductor, and Gabriel Mayers, alto soloist, join me today to discuss this. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Lee.
Paul, so what we just heard was from your typing suite, and we missed out on having you in here last year to talk about that. Can you tell us more?
It was a work for a symphonic wind band. I was inspired to write it because my wife's from Taiping, Jasmine, and every Chinese New Year we're up there, and I love our family, it's great and all the rest of it, but after about, you know, 2 or 3 days of just listening to Cantonese and no English, one tends to want. So I took myself off, wandered around Lake Gardens, and I absolutely love the town. It's a beautiful, beautiful town, and I was just sitting by Lake Gardens one morning, the sun was shining on the lake, and this tune just came into my head, and I just started writing it down on my iPad. And then I completed it. I sent a few snippets over to Lieutenant Colonel, to Nick Grace over at the Royal Marines in the UK, and said, "Look, I'm starting on this thing. Would you like to commission it? Because I started my career with the Royal Marines Band." He said, "Yeah, it sounds very Malaysian." So I came back. It took me about a year to complete it. Four movements, depicting scenes from Taiping, so the Old Market, which is a little bit that you just played from the first movement, then the Kopitiam, then Lake Gardens, and then finally Maxwell Hill. And that was premiered last November in Portsmouth, and lots of ladies that used to live in Taiping and now living in England came down from all points north, south, east and west, and the Malaysian High Commission sent the first secretary down. It was very well received. I was very, very, very privileged to be able to have it played there, and Taiping Town were delighted, to the extent that they asked me back to write another thing for them, which I'm doing in April, which is a Taiping Raintown song for the Taiping Heritage Society and St George's Institution. So it's a wonderful experience writing it, and to have one of the finest ensembles in the world playing it also was just a great privilege. And it comes from my love of Taiping, beautiful town.
So. Going on from what something that you wrote to a piece that's, I think, very recognizable to many, many people and has been for a long time, why Handel's Messiah for your upcoming performance?
Very good reason for it. 2 years ago, Grace Convention Centre staged another musical, which I was, I think I came and was interviewed by Meera for it, called The Rising Sun. Grace Convention Centre is trying to be position itself as being the centre of moral-based, certainly Christian, but certainly moral-based entertainment in Malaysia, as a source for that. Now, Handel's Messiah, interestingly enough, it has a number of records attached to it. It is completely clear that Handel's Messiah, the funds that have been generated from it, have fed, clothed more orphans, fed more hungry, and so on, than any other musical work in history, and certainly have brought more people to the Bible than any other work as well. So it fits all those things. But of course, it's fantastic music. I mean, it is, whether you're Christian or not, it is just a work of a genius. He wrote the whole thing in 24 days. And it doesn't matter what denomination you are, even if you're not religious at all, the music is just unbelievably fantastic for the listeners, for the choir, for the orchestra, for the soloists. It's like everybody wins. And I couldn't think of a better one to follow up with The Rising Sun. And doing it this time of the year, as you said earlier, brings a slightly different angle to it, which, you know, I could wax lyrical about for ages, but that's it in a nutshell, essentially.
And Gabriel, we were talking a little bit earlier about how you're still jet-lagged. Where have you come from?
I came from Lake Charles, Louisiana. I'm actually Canadian, but my husband's living there right now, so...
And what brings you here? What part are you playing in all this?
I'm the alto soloist. I lived in Malaysia several years ago, and I've done The Messiah, actually, with Paul. And so he asked me back, and it was a great opportunity to come and not only sing this wonderful piece during Easter, which is very special. You know, it, as Paul mentioned, it brings a really different angle to The Messiah, which is normally performed traditionally at Christmas time. But also, it's just amazing being here and seeing my friends and eating the food and just being in this wonderful... I mean, I love Malaysia. It's such a beautiful place. I'm so happy to be back. It's like, yay!
Messiah, even though it's commonly... I mean, we've been talking about it as something that tends to come up during Christmas. That's when you have productions of The Messiah popping up all over the place. But it was originally intended, from what I understand, as an Easter performance. How did it come to get switched around to the other side of the year?
I'm not sure that it ever got switched around in the sense that I think the first production was kind of in December, and then the London premiere was in April near Easter. If you look at the libretto and you look at what it's covered, it covers the birth of Christ, but it also covers the Passion and the Resurrection. In fact, more so. So you could really do it at any time. You could do it during Easter time, or you could do it during the Christmas time. I think doing it... If we think about birth and death, birth is a very happy occasion, and death is obviously has its sad side, irrespective of whether you're spiritual or not. So when Messiah is done in the run-up to Christmas, there is a tendency, an automatic tendency, to really focus on the joy, the happiness, the sort of, you know, jump up and down, isn't life wonderful kind of thing. Whereas when you do it around Easter, you have different perspective because you're thinking more about that darker side of things, the legacy, the suffering, and all this kind of thing. So you can bring a different artistic angle to it than you can in December. That's what we're trying to do with this, to give people a little more reflection about, you know, the legacy of Jesus, his suffering, and what he did for mankind. That's really why we're doing it now and what we're trying to attempt to do with the music.
As a piece of music, is it very stylistically different from Handel's other works?
Yes and no. Handel was really, by the time he wrote this, he was 56. And had it not been for the success of Messiah, he would probably have been in a debtor's prison. He'd written a lot of Italian opera, and the English were getting very tired of it and all the rest of it in Italian. So this represented almost a new phase in Handel's career and in his life, and it certainly turned his fortunes around. He was criticised, even in spite of this, by the church and by lots of others, because in those days, you know, biblical texts set to music were supposed to be only done in churches, and he took them to theatres. So from an emotional perspective, there is much more in this work than any other Handel stuff, and you can feel that, you can see that. He's reported as being saying by a waiter who took him his food while he was writing, found him sobbing in tears, and said, I did think I saw heaven itself and the face of God himself, having completed the Hallelujah chorus. So it had a profound effect on Handel himself. And therefore, I think when you listen to it and the way that he's painted pictures with the music and the way he set the libretto, you can see... This is stylistically, emotionally much, much deeper than anything else that he ever wrote, quite clearly.
And in terms of this production, you know, with you saying that you're trying to kind of draw out different elements of a very well-known story,
yeah.
And a very well-known piece of music, what are those elements, musically speaking, that you think you've kind of managed to uncover or reiterate?
Okay, well... For example, one of the arias that Gabriel has is called He Was Despised and Rejected. And it can be sung sort of relatively straightforward, but the way that, and this is why I'm so, so happy that, you know, Gabrielle came over and is singing this, because she manages to draw out of this aria the real pain and suffering and angst of somebody who's been completely left alone in the world and is being tortured beyond endurance, for us, which is, as Christians, is what we believe. There's that. There's the more reflective change of pace that I brought to some of the choruses, quietened them down a little bit, made the whole thing a little bit more reflective rather than celebratory. I think that's probably, and I hope you get a flavour of that last night maybe in rehearsal.
Right. Yeah. In fact, singing this particular piece during Easter is, for me, makes a lot more sense, particularly the alto solo, because it really focuses on the passion and the intensity, just the dramatic intensity of the death of Christ. It's really quite a transforming experience. I really feel it deeply.
So. How much of your work as a soloist is to do with being able to emote the way Paul described, you know, because I think a lot of people might assume that what you do is very technical in nature, that you need to kind of hit certain notes, that you need to be able to do certain things with your voice, but emotion is a big part of that as well.
Well, yes. I mean, I think it's important to have the technical aspect in order to be able to do it. That's the frustrating thing about being a singer, you know, is I think you have to be very technically accurate in order to get that ability, the pianissimo, the forte, to be able to get all that, you need to be technically accurate, you know. It's because it's very difficult to control the voice unless you're really
good.
You're
in control.
You're in control, right. So, you know, that's the frustrating thing about being a singer. Unless your technique is really good, you don't have access to that ability to really emote. Well, at least I don't. I mean, there are some musicians. I guess Bob Dylan would be a good example of that, you know. Had a terrible voice, but could convey that incredible emotion.
Sinatra didn't have a brilliant voice, but he could really...
He was pretty good. Yeah. He was pretty good. Yeah, really good. So, yeah.
I'm speaking today with Paul Baker, conductor, and Gabrielle Mays, alto soloist. We're talking about Handel's Music for Easter, their upcoming performance specifically. Up next, we talk a little bit more about Baroque strings as well as what to expect in this production. You are listening today to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Paul Baker, conductor, and Gabrielle Mays, alto soloist. We're talking about Handel's Messiah. Now, we've kind of been addressing the fact that when you do it during Easter, you get to do something a little bit different with it. How different overall, though, are modern-day productions of Messiah compared to what we know of the time when it debuted?
Okay. That's... You call the bigger picture, and that is actually the biggest picture of the lot, because every conductor's challenge is to try to convey what you think the composer intended, but make it relevant to modern-day audiences. Sometimes you make a change and people say, oh yeah, well, Handel wouldn't have liked that. To which my response is, well, Handel probably wouldn't like Assam Laksa, or Adele, or PlayStation 4, or Malaysian drivers.
No one likes Malaysian drivers.
So That's always the challenge. So what we've tried to do is to bring as much as we know about it. You've got to remember that Handel conducted over 30 performances of this himself, and at every performance he changed something. So there really isn't what one might term a definitive interpretation of the work. It's kind of like you've got the ingredients and you do it yourself. So, however, instrumentally wise, it was different. For example, stringed instruments have a bow. Everybody knows that. You draw them across the strings, it produces a sound. Now, the modern bow is weighted with little pieces of lead at both ends of it, which means that when you draw the bow across the string, you get a consistent volume. The old Baroque bow wasn't weighted, so when you draw it across the string, you get a natural decay. So instead of getting da, you get da, and it happens naturally. So I've been very, very happy to work with a young man who I think you interviewed last week, called Dr. Andrew Filmer, who is a wonderful guy. I mean, really, he can make things really easy to understand, and he's assisted me in helping get the strings to reproduce those kinds of sounds that would have been done naturally with Baroque instruments and Baroque bows. So we're trying to bring that level of authenticity to it as well, the rhythmic way that things would have been done, the fact that automatically when a soloist, for example, Gabriel has one of her arias, she sings one section, then another section, she goes back to repeat the first section. And historically, both in early music and Baroque music, when they went back on the repeat, they would add ornaments. And the orchestra would, if they're following on with an echo, would automatically copy those ornaments. So we're trying to do little things like that. But ultimately, it is a story. Chiho Mack, who's the bass soloist and chorus master, has been fantastic in helping draw out the real quality of voice with the choir, and again, trying to get them to sing in the way. Vibrato didn't exist in Baroque times, so we're trying to flatten that out. The soloists are not singing with this Italian opera kind of thing attached to it. But the bottom line of it is, and those that know me know that I'm not an academician, is that the right word?
Something like that.
Yeah. in terms of music, a musicologist. People help me, very, very expert people help me to formulate this vision. I'm a storyteller, and our job is to bring everybody together, communicate with them a vision, a story, that they can then communicate to the audience. And if I have a choice between the audience leaving saying, bravo, well and accurately played, or wow, I've had an experience that, wow, the second one will win every time for me. Always, and there's no doubt about that, because that, I believe, is my job and our job. If we haven't moved the audience, we haven't done our job. It's as simple as that. So authenticity is important, but it's one aspect of creating an experience, and the overall experience is what matters.
Do you think that authenticity is something that I would be able to feel even if I don't know what it is? Because I'm always curious about this. What happens if I'm not as intimately involved with the Christ story as, somebody who's of the faith, for example? Or what if I just don't appreciate music in this way? I understand the need for authenticity, but as an audience member, what am I listening to that would make me think, that just, that's authentic. I get that.
I don't think we actually want anybody to sit there thinking that's authentic. It's like peeling fruit or pass the parcel unwrapping layers. Everybody that comes to see it will experience it at a different level. Those that are completely new, some people will be going, frankly, because they just want to support a friend or they want to support the church, and they're thinking in their heads, oh, it's classical music, I don't like one, but I better go. And they'll enjoy it. Others, friends of mine, friends of Gabriel's, who are music scholars, will go and will appreciate it to all levels. But everybody should be able to appreciate it at least one level which resonates with them. I'm not expecting everybody to say, oh, yes, interesting use of the bow on the G string there. It's just not going to happen. And I don't want it to happen. But those that do know what they're talking about and have studied it, I hope they also get satisfaction from what we're trying to do. Right, as I say, up to the simplest person who just wants to go and just listen to some new music they haven't heard before, and we'll go at the end, I really enjoyed that. I didn't understand what the strings were doing, and I don't care, it was just fun. I enjoyed it, it was great fun. So, you know, I'm not trying to turn everybody into a Baroque specialist, as it were.
Gabriel, I'm curious about how this differs from the last time you performed it here in Malaysia. Do you feel that you've changed, that it's changed, that you're approaching it differently at all?
Well, I performed this 6 years ago, and I think the level of musicianship this time, because it was a work in progress 6 years ago, is radically different. I mean, the soloists are phenomenal, and the choir sounds great. The orchestra sounds great. So it's a very exciting experience for me. I mean, The Messiah is just a gorgeous piece. I've performed it a lot in Canada, in the States, in Europe. It's going to be a great performance because the level of musicianship, as I said, is radically different. And I'm really impressed with the soloists, the local Malaysian soloists. They're as fine as any solo. In fact, you know, in some respects, better than a lot of the soloists I've worked with in Europe and the U.S.
That's a wonderful thing to hear.
Yeah,
that makes me happy.
And it's a really warm, beautiful group. Everybody's welcoming. You know, there's no diva-ism, which is something prevalent in my profession, you know, so I immediately felt welcome. It's great. Everybody's there to make music. Everybody's there to make the experience really special. And I think there are a lot of fairly religious people, too. So it's important for everybody to really come together and make this production great.
What led you to being an alto soloist in the first place? You know, what twists and turns did you have to walk?
I'm originally, I have a master's in early music. That was my first love, but I have really, and I also have a degree in piano. I was a jazz singer. I put myself through school singing jazz, believe it or not. I love the voice. The voice is really, for me, it's just a passion. And although I do early music, I've kind of veered off more towards musical theater and cabaret, and I'm quite a diverse singer.
How did you kind of get trained up in different styles? Because just hearing, you know, the different styles that you sing in, it's quite sort of head-turning for me, the idea of being able to shift from jazz to, you know, to Handel to, yeah, it's just, that's a lot of different styles.
Growing up with older siblings, starting with rock and roll, you know, I loved heavy metal, I loved rock and roll, I loved classical music. My whole family are musicians and artists. So I grew up with, you know, the Shostakovich string quartets and Led Zeppelin, you know, everything, Ella Fitzgerald. And so I just sort of, over the years, developed a real passion for really good vocalists. And so it's just something. Music is universal. So I've never really focused on one particular style, although I study early music in school because I really have branched out a lot.
Could you give us a quick sample of what it is that you do?
Sure. I mean, I can do something different. When I was living in Paris, I was in this fantastic Negro spiritual group, actually, called Voices, and I was one of the soloists. Maybe I can sing something from that.
Yeah, just please.
To give a little diversity. Okay. Nobody knows the troubles I've seen, Lord. Nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Nobody knows the troubles I've seen, Lord. Nobody knows but Jesus. Brother, won't you sing for me? Brother, won't you sing for me? Brother, won't and help me to keep the devil away.
There you go.
I just woke up 45 minutes ago, so it's a little rusty. I apologize.
No, I mean, when you're fully awake and on stage this Friday and Saturday. What could you tell us about your solo in this, though, in Messiah? What are you singing?
I think the most prevalent solo is "He Was Despised," and that is something that's just so utterly heart-wrenching, because it really brings you towards that experience when Jesus is about to be crucified. And just the, again, as Paul said, the utter loneliness and the utter despair and the cruelty is just, Handel captures that so beautifully in that aria. And it's 10 minutes long, by the way, so it's like it's a very long, so you're almost brought along the path of the crucifixion. And for me, it really speaks to me. And I hope I'm able to really detach myself from that ego state and just bring people to that moment. It's really beautiful. If I can do that, then that's the meaning of my life, you know.
And so. we've worked it so that we've slightly reorchestrated it so that it allows this lonely voice, so there's the hanging on occasions, whereas originally it had accompaniment underneath it, and we've sparsed it down, if that's the correct word, haven't we? So that it leaves you hanging in, like, just like Jesus on the cross. There's these moments where she's just on her own completely, without the orchestra, and it's...
And you really are on your own.
It's very, very moving.
You really are on your own.
Moving.
It's really transporting. Mm. So it's a, yeah.
Considering the importance of Messiah, where does it place in a classical music education? I mean, at what point, for example, Gabriel, did you encounter it?
The Messiah. I think everybody is familiar with the Messiah. You know, even the most uneducated people, if you just sing Hallelujah, everybody goes, "Oh yeah, is that the Messiah? Really?" You know, almost everybody. Where did I encounter it? I mean, I was brought to performances at a very young age. You know, my father used to drag me to all sorts of stuff. Being a classical musician himself, at some point it was like, "Oh, Dad." But the Messiah is really something that's been a part of my life forever, really.
Paul?
Well, more so in the West. I mean, it's probably true to say that in England there's probably several hundred performances every single year. In Malaysia, it was done last November by the fabulous Yin Chi Choir in Sitiawan. And I think I could be corrected for this, that the last time it was done before that was when I did it with Gabriel in 2009. But where does it play in the music education? Well, for example, this year, anybody, particularly international schools that's studying O-level music, is studying one of the choruses from Messiah, the Glory of the Lord. So international students out there, probably your only opportunity for many years to come to see a fully professional production of Messiah in Malaysia, and particularly in the Klang Valley. So it's just so much part of the institution of classical music in the West that it almost defines it in some respects, because it is so well known. And as I said earlier, because everybody wins. So yeah, and it's a great, especially in Malaysia where we don't have a dedicated radio station for it, we don't have it in schools. Messiah is a great way for somebody to take that first step outside of their comfort zone, you know, say, okay, I'll go along, I'll give it a go, because the music is so beautiful. I defy anybody not to like it. I really do.
Right now, where I'm living in Richmond, Virginia, I think there's about 6 performances going on of the Messiah. I mean, from very amateur to very professional, you know, it's just a constant. It's just always resonating there, the Messiah, Easter and at Christmas. So, yeah.
Finally, to close us off, I understand that there is a constant well, I don't know if battle is too strong a word to use, when it comes to rising for the chorus, when you watch performances of Handel's Messiah. Where do you stand on that? Do you stand?
I don't actually understand the question.
Well, there's this, apparently in performances of the Messiah, when it hits the chorus, the famous chorus, half the audience will stand and the other half stays firmly seated. Right. Where do you stand on it?
Well, I stand on the English tradition, and we don't know for 100% certainty, but tradition has it that when King George II attended the London premiere of Messiah in 1743 in the Theatre Royal Covent Garden, first few bars into the Hallelujah chorus, he stood because he said, "I will stand for my king above." And of course, when the king stands,
everyone stands.
So yes, I will be turning round just prior to the Hallelujah chorus on Friday and Saturday and entreating the audience that the king commands you arise. It's a British tradition. Is it done in America?
And we all sing. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah?
Still
yes,
stand for
yes,
that
yes,
as well,
yes,
yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
And the soloists join in with that chorus as well. So there are, if somebody's stubborn and they want to stay seated, well, that's entirely up to them.
No. We'll make sure everybody stands.
But I think the other thing is it comes about 2 hours into the show anyway, so it's welcome opportunity to get
the circulation just kind of cut off at that point. Yeah, so it's a practical thing, too, you know.
All right.
It works on all angles, really.
Handel's Messiah, conducted by Paul Baker, will be performed this Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. in Grace Convention Centre. Tickets are 48 ringgit. You can purchase your tickets online or by ringing 03-7880-7999. Thank you both very much for coming in.
Can we just say www.ticketpro.com.my is the one to go to for your online tickets.
Great.
Thank you, Lynn, for having us. It's been wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
it's
both.
Fun.
I've been speaking with Paul Baker and Gabriel Mayers about Handel's music for Easter and their upcoming performance. You've been listening today to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.